What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast number 198, When the Pain is Real, Athletic Trainer Injuries. This week, our guests are Mike Overman. He is joining us via Google Hangout. Jesse Lopez, he is sitting right here with the pink microphone, and Bubba Wilson with the orange microphone. I'm your host, Jeremy Jackson. I've got right beside me
Cooper,
Juanita,
and Tiana.
And we've got other students doing other jobs. Over there on Twitter is Jasmine. So she's using hashtag TheSMB, or she's watching her for that. If you have questions, you can ask them on there, hashtag TheSMB, and we will ask your question live. Also in the live chat, who do we have, Juanita?
We have Doc Hale, Mitchell, Rob, DeJohn, Israel Montano, Carlos, Catherine Marr, Jason Moore, and Ruth Gonzalez.
All right. Ruth is Jesse's counterpart there over at Dobie High School. So the link for this, or yeah, you can go directly to this episode, is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/ATinjuries. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/ATinjuries. Now, Israel's listening live, and he is one of the winners of our sportshealth.com/SMB gift card. But some of the feedback that he wrote was he loved the presentation that Dr. Pham gave when we were talking about the eyeballs. It was really a graphic video if you want to go back and watch it. See, he said, I now feel better prepared to handle eye injuries after a fellow sister school had one athlete with a complete eye avulsion during baseball practice last year.
How'd they do that?
I don't know. Maybe we'll have to get him on here and ask him that or something.
Do you have an email? Any way they can email you and tell you that story?
I'm sure he could. He's in there live right now.
All right, Israel. Let us know.
There you go.
So we have a picture of it.
Yeah, right. Pictures, I'm sure.
Yeah. Somebody took a phone out, I know. They had to.
If it was last year. So, all right. Without much further ado, we are going to get right to our guests and our stories for today, because I'm sure Bubba will add his own in, or at least that's what he's told me so far. So, Mike, once you start us off, tell us your athletic trainer story briefly, how you became an athletic trainer, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I started in high school. My best friend did it in high school and kind of talked me into it. Really enjoy what I did. Went on to University of Houston. Was a student trainer there. Did a couple of internships in the league. Went to grad school at Texas Tech and left there before finishing my master's. Came to Magnolia High School, and this is my 14th year at Magnolia High School.
So did you ever finish your master's?
I did not. I got halfway through and decided to go ahead and get paid, get the big bucks. And, you know, honestly, the job for Magnolia came open, and I came out here and interviewed, and I just loved the drive out here in the town, and it was awesome. And I thought it was an awesome opportunity for me to come out here and be a part of it. So I am working on my master's again right now through Lamar University.
Gotcha. Very cool. All right, Jesse.
Really athletic training just kind of fell into my lap to some extent. I actually experienced an injury when I was I want to say an eighth grader. I was still doing athletics then, and I actually went through a glass door and I cut two tendons. Ended up doing a lot of physical therapy for it, and I liked it, so I wanted to pursue physical therapy at first. Got into the University of Texas, had one of my advisors mention something about athletic training, sounded interesting, so I kind of went to the little, I guess, meeting about it and whatnot, and it sounded pretty nice, especially working with UT Athletics. Definitely appealed to me, so I did that. Got an internship my senior year there, and did some time there preseason with the Tennessee Titans, and went down to the Valley for 4 years down in South Texas, and then been at Dobie for going on 6 years now.
Do we want to know the story of how you went through the glass?
No, I was just chasing my brother through the house.
Okay.
So what's pretty neat is I was a student trainer in high school at Dobie, as well as Jeremy.
Yep.
Okay.
So yeah, we were there together.
I didn't realize that.
Okay. There you go.
What more?
Yeah, he said he actually interviewed for that job there at Dobie right before Chad Barrett got it. So.
Okay.
So sweet. It's a very, very small world, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All right. Bubba, I'm sure everybody's heard it because you've been on here a bunch, which I appreciate. But why don't you go ahead and give us your brief athletic trainer story?
I'm old, not athletic, but I love athletics. So the blend of I have a degree in physical education tells you how old I am, with an emphasis in athletic training. Wasn't even a major back then. I like athletics, and I like the medicine part, and it was a good blend between the two. I was a short little scrawny kid in high school. Got involved in this then, went on to Baylor University. As I said many times, I graduated with honors. It was an honor to be allowed to graduate. And 25 years ago, started in this profession. So we don't have enough time to go through everywhere I've worked. So.
All right.
Mike, tell us about your injury. How did it happen? How did you evaluate and who called for help?
So it was at the district cross country meet this year. We had a young lady pass out on the back end of the course. Another athletic trainer got in the golf cart, went to go get her. And my athletic director and I were standing there and we just felt like it was taking a while. So we started walking that direction just to see what was going on and see if we can get over there and help out with her. I don't know, maybe 150 yards that direction. They came with the golf cart with her in it and said, hey, we need to evaluate her more over at the tent. And I said, okay, well, I'll just jump on the back of the golf cart. Kind of broke my rule. I didn't sit down. Like I always tell all of my students and all of our athletes, get on the golf cart, sit down.
Yeah. Do as I say, not as I do.
Exactly. You know, it was one of those golf carts that has the seat in the back that the seat folds over and it's a little bed of the golf cart to say. I put my feet on the bottom foot rest and grabbed the handles and they took off in the cart and I just wasn't in a position to really balance myself well, lost my balance. And I remember thinking, I'm going to fall. Do I jump or do I just fall? And then all of a sudden it happened. My right foot hit the concrete and it snapped. So had tib-fib fracture, you know, rolled on the ground a second, felt it, heard it, knew what was going on. Kind of tucked my hand down my leg just to kind of see what was where, felt the step off, looked at our athletic director and I said, call 911. And of course he and I joke around a lot. So he was thinking I was joking. I was like, no, seriously, I got a broken leg. I need surgery and the ambulance has to get me there. And luckily for me, it was the district cross country meet. So there was an athletic trainer from every school there. Probably had two or three taking care of my girl at the tent. The rest of them came over and helped me up or helped me out, you know, of course activated the EMS system and they started evaluating my leg, cut my pants off and realized, hey, this is one you don't want to move until the ambulance is here. It was pretty close to being compound. So I guess that's about it.
Okay.
Went to the emergency room, had surgery the next day.
All right, now hang on here. Before we go any further, let's get the real story out here. Did you or did you not scream like a little girl when it happened?
Initially, no. A couple minutes after the adrenaline left me, boy, that bad boy hurt.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
It hurt. And it took them about 12 hours to figure out the right pain med and the right dosage to give me to make it stop hurting.
Did you tell them just put you to sleep? You won't feel it then?
They did in the ER for like 15 minutes to reduce it. And apparently I screamed loud while they put me out. I don't wish this upon anybody. It hurt.
All right. So you sent me a couple pictures and I've tweeted or Instagrammed those out about, you know, the fracture, either the x-ray or the pain. You can see where the pants were cut open. Did any of the athletic trainers like touch or feel? Because normally if I have a broken bone, a kid's okay, then I'll let my students say, all right, you know, just feel what the clavicle feels like or just see what this feels like. Did anybody try to do that?
You know, I don't think they did. I think they, you know, cut the pants and they could see the bone kind of pushing on the skin and you could see the angle of the foot. Everybody knew what it was. I think they cut my shoe off. And, you know, just check for pulse, make sure I still had a pulse down there. And just what they were going to splint it. By the time they got the pants off or cut off, they saw what it looked like. We just kind of waited for the ambulance to get there to have them on standby and have them there. And as soon as they got there, they got an IV started and started loading me with pain meds. But those were a joke. They didn't do anything.
All right.
So, Jesse, would you please tell us the story about your injury?
Oh, yeah, I was working a soccer game, girls JV game, I believe. And I just, you know, your typical night, you know, it was a pretty cold evening. Ended up having a girl go down, and I remember running out onto the field, you know, everything like you normally do routine-wise. Went there, got to the female that was down, and she actually, you know, everything checked out fine. But the only thing I can remember was as I was going to evaluate her was I actually kind of lunged forward. And instead of me actually stopping and squatting down to assess the injury, I actually kind of lunged forward, heard a little pop, just thought it was your typical, you know, you bend your knee and you get that little gas pop or something in your knee there, and didn't think much of it. Once I got back to the sideline, you know, it felt a little tight, didn't think anything of it. Really just didn't think much of it. Finished out the game, wasn't hurting, didn't swell on me, didn't do anything. Went to the gym actually even after that game, and I got on the bike just kind of get a warm up going, and it just started feeling kind of unstable, didn't feel quite right. I wasn't liking it, so I just called it a night and went home. I was actually taking a shower once I got home, and as I was washing off, I kind of felt a little slip happen and didn't think much of it still at that time, and still didn't like it. So went to bed, just thought it was just, you know, felt funny. Woke up the next morning. Again, first step out of bed, everything was tight. Felt a shift as I was getting into my truck, so I went ahead and informed my coach, my athletic coordinator there at my campus. Told him what had happened. Thought it would be a good idea to get it checked out. Sure enough, it ended up being a torn ACL. I didn't get an ACL surgery till another 2 months or so afterwards. I was still fully functional, still can do a full squat, still can do everything normal. Didn't even think the ACL was torn. My workers' comp doctor that I had to see through the district thought it was just an IT band strain of some sort. And I went 3 weeks with it being diagnosed as an IT band, you know, strain of some sort. And then once they finally set up the MRI revealed that I had a full torn ACL. So,
at what point did athletic trainer mode kick in and you finally realized it was torn? And I'll explain, and you'll understand why I ask this question when I tell my story. But at some point, you're not thinking, oh, it's this. You're thinking, eh, it's sore. And that's my first question. My second question is, the girl that got hurt that you had to go and see, was she flopping or was she really hurt? Because if she's flopping, you want to take her knees out.
Right, No, it wasn't a typical ankle sprain on the soccer field.
It was
something decent, nothing major, of course. But
so you feel better about hurting yourself than if she'd been flopping.
Definitely. But as far as when I kind of realized there was more going on is when I felt that shift kind of or that instability kind of. And when I was riding the bike,
right.
Like I said, I didn't feel any give, any instability, any swelling or anything while at the game at all. So it was kind of, you know, and the big thing was I was still able to do a full squat all the way, you know, butt to the heels,
right.
You know, all that, everything was fully functional. And I mean,
you're the atypical ACL. You didn't swell up big.
And I was still fully functional. The only thing that even during the 2 months of, before my surgery, the only thing that I usually got it was when I was on the treadmill at an incline doing side shuffles. That's the only thing that ever really got it even before the surgery. So
did you ever have your coworker Ruth check you out?
Yeah, and she said there was laxity, but she had laxity in the unaffected leg also. So it wasn't, you know, she thought she was getting an endpoint. I told her it was probably more of just a hamstring catching and guarding up. So I mean, even when Dr. Crumby, who finally diagnosed it, he even said though that he feels it there's a slight endpoint, but it's a muscular endpoint versus the true ACL endpoint.
Yeah, it's soft versus firm.
Right.
And is that, Bob, is that something that he only knows because he does so much of that evaluation?
I think it's like anything. I think with experience comes understanding, you know, and you can, if you do enough Lockmans and we all get there, I don't do nearly as many as I used to, obviously, but you feel that this isn't a stable knee, you know, this isn't an intact ACL versus that, you know, boom, rock hard, stop, you know, you get that kind of soft, you know, whatever. And then, you know, now you can do the argument of, is it partial? Is it full?
Right.
Doesn't matter. It's torn. It's like being a little bit pregnant, you know, either it works or it doesn't work. So,
yeah.
All right. I'll share mine.
Hey, Jesse.
Go ahead.
Huh?
Go ahead, Mike.
Jesse. You said workman's comp made you go to a certain doctor.
Right.
At what point were you able to get to Crumby?
After that 3 week diagnosis, once I had I was still feeling that tightness, like it was, cause it did actually feel like IT band, something that like I felt some snapping on that lateral aspect of the knee. And you know, I would do a, you know, an IT stretch and all that. And I did feel my tensor fascia lata kind of there, just pretty tight as well. So he went ahead and did that. My workman's comp doctor wasn't even getting a true Lockman either. So he actually had an assistant of his also not get a true Lachman or a positive on that either. Yeah. So they both kind of thought it was, it feels like there's an endpoint. It wasn't enough. But Crumbie, he felt it right away. And he's like, no, it's not. There's not, like Bubba said, it's not a stable solid endpoint. And then Crumbie was like, yep, let's get the MRI to be on the sure side. And sure enough, there was like a strand of my ACL still intact.
Did your workman's comp doctor refer you to Crumbie, or you just went because you knew something else was going on?
I actually got referred to someone within the network, and I kind of had to fight for seeing Crumbie, just for the fact that, you know, I had the working relationship with him, the fact that I trusted him, that I sent all my athletes to him and whatnot. And that became a whole ordeal in itself as well.
Yeah, Mike, you were lucky. Yours was a no-brainer.
I tell you what, the lucky thing for me is, you know, it was an emergency room visit, and right away, within 5 minutes, I had our team doc on the phone and just making sure I went the right channels that he was able to intervene on it. So that was pretty cool.
Okay, now hang on. Did you do this with pain medicine on board or without? Because I'd love to have heard that conversation.
It was right before the pain really kicked in, and I gave the phone to one of the other athletic trainers and said, here's our team doc. Can you talk them through, make sure we're doing this right?
Okay, all right.
So my story, I didn't actually get hurt at work, but it helps me understand what the athletes go through. So it's vacation Bible school. I'm always in charge of the games because my wife's the children's minister. So as I'm leading rec, I jump backwards to avoid the kids tagging me because I'm 34 years old playing with 10-year-old kids, and, you know, I can't be outdone. Jump backwards, and so my motion is moving backwards. My legs are moving backwards, and I land on my toes, and then my knee hyperextends, and so my knee buckles. I fall to the floor. Like, all right, hold up, let me see. So there, I'm laying on the floor. I'm like, okay, did I hear a feel pop or snap? No. Okay. Can I test myself? No, I can't really test myself. So I go over to the chair, and I'm bending it, moving it, and I don't feel any sort of lax, anything like that, but man, it hurts. It hurts bad. So it just so happened that the next day I was going to a sports medicine clinic. So in the middle of the clinic, I asked one of the doctors, hey, you mind checking me out real quick? I try to teach my wife how to do this, but her hands are small. It's not easy to teach on somebody that, you know.
It's what YouTube is for.
Well, I mean, I showed her on her, and then it's just something you have to have a feel for. And so that's kind of my story. So then, you know, for a couple of weeks, I have a really sore hamstring, posterior capsule, that kind of stuff. And I just felt helpless as to what should I do to make this better. It didn't help that the next week we went to the river. So, you know, I'm walking up and down the river and swimming and jumping off of rope swings and that kind of stuff. But that's neither here nor there. So
what game were you playing with the kids? Because I just get this mental image of you hanging on an 8-foot rim after dunking on 10-year-olds. And so I don't know, you know.
It would have to be a 6-foot rim if I was going to dunk, but no.
Credit card vertical?
We were, what we called shepherd tag. And it was like, we need some time to kill. So we're supposed to be shepherd, like in the Bible. And we had these handkerchiefs, and so we had them tucked in our belt. So it was basically like flag football, but no football, just tag. And so if they got my flag, then I would have been out.
So when you fell to the ground, somebody got your flag then too.
Yeah, I think one of those freaking kids did. They just snatched my flag right after I fell. Tag them kids.
You have a vertical like Mike did on crutches after surgery then, is what you're saying.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So, all right, Bubba, I know you want to share your story.
All right, I got to set it up a little bit to make it make sense. But I was working at Kingwood High School at the time, 2000 was when this happened. My favorite 3 days of the year was our varsity baseball tournament. So we were on day two at the evening. We had hosted a soccer game earlier that night. And it had rained, and so we were behind a little bit. The rain has to be in this story. We were behind a little bit on the schedule for baseball, and I won't get into the details of the setup of the campus, but basically we had a cable that went around our three practice fields. Well, I come out of the dugout, setting up everything, making sure the water and all that's good for our last game, and as I go to get a Diet Coke from the concession stand, I see a vehicle coming down the service entrance, which wasn't uncommon. That's where our umpires came. That's where our workers came for the concession stand. But it's 9 o'clock at night. And I thought, well, nobody ought to be coming to work right now. Well, they never turned. They went straight and went onto our football field because they had cut the cable at that end. And they're doing donuts on the football field. Now, we had just built a girls' field house, and it hadn't even opened up yet, and that had been vandalized. One of our concession stands had been vandalized. And so I get on the phone, my cell phone, and I'm trying to get district police, and of course, they're on the other side of the river, and nobody's close. So I kind of go into, jokingly, Barney Fife mode, if anybody knows that show. And no, I didn't have a gun with one bullet in my pocket, but I wasn't going to try to stop them and do a citizen's arrest. I really just wanted to get a license plate number. But of course, it's dark around the football field. So they see me coming out there. Well, they leave and go back out the way they came. So I'm going to go from where I was between our tennis courts and our football field to get to the parking lot where there's more light to see if I can get the license plate number. Now, remember, I said there's a cable. I've jumped over this thing a million times. And remember, I said it rained. Those are important. So as I plant my foot, it's kind of like Mike will probably say as he landed, as I planted my foot and pushed off to go over this cable that I don't have a vertical and I could get over easy, my foot slips and it's all slow motion. The cable catches me about mid-shin and I can feel it riding up my leg over my knee and catches mid-thigh and I'm like, this is not going to be good. And boom, the next thing I know, I'm on the ground. It just slung me over. Well, I look up and I'm about 3 inches from the concrete slab from hitting my head. And I landed with my arms up into my chest, and I get up and my ribs hurt like crazy. So I don't even know that my shoulder's posteriorly dislocated at this point. It's out. And I'm like, man, my ribs hurt. And I take about 10 steps and I realize my ribs really hurt and my shoulder feels funny. So I went and I kind of wiggle it and it goes clunk. Well, I'm not thinking, that's why I asked you this question. Mm-hmm. I'm not thinking like an athletic trainer at this point. I'm thinking like a police officer. I want to stop this act of vandalism. So I don't put two and two together that I had just dislocated and it reduced. So, of course, add insult to injury, I can't get the license plate number, but some people go down the street to try to catch them. About 5 minutes later, who shows up? Campus police. You know, they're never a cop when you need them. So I don't think anything of it. It hurts. It's sore. My ribs are hurting. The coaches are laughing at me, wishing they had it on video because we'd have won some serious money on America's Funniest Home Videos if we'd have had this on film. But by the end of the night, I can't raise my arm any higher than about mid-chest level. So I have to get coaches to help me with coolers. I get home. I'm getting undressed to go to bed. I'm taking my T-shirt off, or my shirt off, and my arm comes out. It comes out of socket again. So I have to grab it and reduce it. But again, I'm not thinking. I'm tired. It's midnight. You know, I'm not thinking. It just went out. I just went, oh, it hurt. Go to sleep, get up, have to go to work the next morning. I can't raise it any higher than, like I said, mid-chest. I'm one-armed. I finished working that Saturday for baseball. Go home, finish the weekend, go to work on Monday. Go fill out all the workers' comp paperwork. Get a doctor's appointment on Monday morning. That Thursday, I'm having an MRI. Find out that not only did I dislocate posteriorly and tear my posterior labrum, I knocked the entire back 50% of my glenoid, the articular cartilage of my glenoid got knocked off. A week later, I was having surgery. And 4 surgeries later, everything has torn apart again. Nothing is healed. There's some reasons behind that. It wasn't physician error. And I need a 5th, but I'm not willing to do it. So I went in the surgery department. And I don't have cool pictures, though, like Overman does on my injury.
Yeah, well.
And no, Mike, I did not scream. So
whatever.
I didn't.
There's nobody around to tell you if you
did. No, the coaches that saw me getting up were mad that they didn't get the video. They can say I didn't scream. The best part of the whole thing was I've got this friend who later on that year, I was working more baseball, and he was a sophomore coach, and he goes, hey, and I look up at him, and he's running towards that same cable. And he stops and steps over it real slow and then takes off running again just to be a smart aleck to me. And I'm like, you know, bravo. Good job. But, yeah, I never jumped over that thing again. So,
yeah, for good reason.
And I told my principal after it happened, they can tear up the school all they want. I'm going to wave at them and tell them good luck because I'm not going to try to stop them. So,
lesson learned, huh?
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, now that we've heard the story of the injury, so we'll talk about the rehab process and then just kind of what you learned as experiencing that pain, knowing what your athletes are going through now. You know, if it makes you a better clinician, a better athletic trainer, having experienced that. I'll start off. For me, I think understanding the injury and the feeling of hopelessness. Like I said, I honestly didn't know what to do. I was like, oh man, it just hurts so bad. And it still hurts and still hurts. And then I went and saw somebody and they said, you know, we'll try this. And then actually when I started going to Erosti after I went to SWATA, they said, hey, yeah, come check it out for free. He's like, oh, well, this hurts. Let me just see what they can do. Well, through the work that we did there and the rehab that I should have known how to do, then I started getting a lot better. And now it doesn't bother me at all, right? But for some reason, I just couldn't think to put myself in that situation of, okay, well, here's the problem. Here's how you fix it.
You're not thinking like an athletic trainer. Physicians and athletic trainers, and I'll say physical therapists, make the worst patients of all.
So for me, I understand the athlete's injury just a little bit more, having had something to where I couldn't just walk it off, or I couldn't just be better the next day or something like that. So we're going to start again with you, Mike. Let's talk about the rehab process. I know Bubba asked you in the warm-up stuff if you have a calf yet. So how's the calf looking?
Well, it's starting to form. I tell you that the weirdest thing, I remember at one point looking down at my calf and my quad thinking, oh my Lord, where'd they go?
AWOL.
You know, for me, I had pretty significant pain for about a week and a half, and it was just, first of all, I was in the middle of football season, so that's horrible, and just laid up in bed. It finally got going on rehab. It was a slow progress at the beginning, rocking and rolling in rehab right now. I've gone to 24 PT visits, just got approved for another 12. Not able to run quite yet. I could do like a little jog across the athletic training room if I need to, but unfortunately, if somebody gets hurt right now, I'm walking out to them on the field. But I'm happy that I'm able to do that. It's crazy. You take for granted the little things that you're able to do when you're not hurt. Whenever you get to you get the ability back to go out and actually work a football game, it's pretty cool. Neat thing about rehabbing is I'm actually going to a physical therapy clinic, and I'm doing the work, you know, doing my rehab and watching others rehab as well. And I've been able to take a lot of techniques, a lot of different exercises, and some actual equipment that I've seen at PT and bring it into our athletic training room here. And I feel like it's improving me as an athletic trainer. It's improving our athletic training room because we got more equipment that, you know, for instance, we were lacking on equipment for like a hand wrist injury. And I was able to see one of my other athletes that broke his arm there doing rehab, and they had a little Velcro board and doing exercises on that. And so we brought that board in. Now it's part of our equipment. We've used it several times since, and it's making me a better athletic trainer. That's for sure.
All right.
All right.
Hang on. I'll ask all of you this. Because it was asked me after one of my surgeries, are you any more sympathetic? And you kind of answered it, Jeremy, a little bit. Are you any more sympathetic to your athletes? And I'm going to take it a step further, and I'm going to say sympathetic to your athletes that had surgery. And I'll answer first and say no. I'm not more sympathetic. I've been through it, so I think I can explain it ahead of time better. But it's still, you're going to feel crappy. You got to get moving. Yeah, you had surgery. You have post-op pain, but let's go. That's always been my attitude. And even after surgery, I'm like, no, I can't, unless I'm required to lay around. We're not going to lay around and feel sorry for ourselves. We got to get going. So I'll ask y'all if y'all, what your thoughts on that are.
Jesse?
Oh, I'm definitely all game with that. I don't have any sympathy. I think after now experiencing everything that, like Bubba said, it's, you have a better understanding of what to inform the athlete of pretty much everything that's going to go, you know, step by step by step, what you're going to feel. Yeah, you're going to feel crappy here, you're going to feel crappy here, but you can explain it so good to them to where, hey, we're at this phase right now, let's get over this hump, and hey, now we're going to start getting those smiles on those faces, we're going to make you sweat, make you do stuff. But yeah, laying around is not an option. And I mean, I laid around feeling helpless, but I still got up and got to my rehab sessions when necessary. I still did my homework when I had to do my stuff when, you know, during my process. So, you know, definitely don't feel sympathetic.
No doubt. For me as well, I mean, you got to get out there and you got to push it. If you just, you know, I had a week and a half of not, almost 2 weeks of not being able to do stuff. And, you know, that's the point that, you know, you can't rehab because you got to let it get a certain amount of healing in. But once I started rehabbing, I mean, you got to get after it. You got to push it. You got to get yourself better. You can't just sit around and baby it. You're not going to get better that way. And to me, you know, you see that you can push it a little bit more. You can find ways to improve yourself and just tell your athletes, hey, I know your pain. I know what you're going through, but this is what it takes. And next week, you're going to be at a whole new level of what you're doing now. And it's really neat to be able to relate to your athletes that way.
Plus, when they go, oh, what do you know about it? You can show them the scar, mm-hmm. You know, say this. So
you got your cred.
You don't have that, Jeremy.
Your street cred.
Yeah, that's right. It's like our own tattoo.
I don't know if I can answer this question because I didn't actually have surgery. I mean, even when I broke my nose, I didn't have surgery. Just pushed it back in place. But
right.
But I do know, like, a lot of these exercises that I learned there, I'm like, look, I do these exercises every day to help relieve, you know, my low back pain. So I know that this stuff works, but it's not quite the same as having surgery. So, yeah. And it wasn't at work, so I don't know if I even qualify for this.
You don't.
It's okay though, because I own the mic, so
you're okay. Point taken. You're in the club.
All right, Jesse, you didn't talk at all about your physical therapy experience.
I was actually excited. I mean, the fact that I was gonna be the patient, not the athletic trainer, definitely. I was pretty enthusiastic about getting it started. I actually was 2 weeks later than I was supposed to. So I was already, just me knowing what I know about ACLs, I was already doing my quad sets and stuff since I wasn't technically in the clinic yet. I knew to start off, let's get some quad pumps going, some ankle pumps, everything, just kind of getting stuff moving around. And once I got into the rehab or in the clinic itself, it just made it that much easier. But as far as the experiences I learned or the stuff that I took from being in the clinic is, I mean, it was pretty much, I don't want to say cut and dry. I added a couple things to, you know, my back pocket when it comes to how to handle ACLs and whatnot. But again, I think the best thing that I took was just the whole being able to tell your athlete, we need to do this because it's going to do that. Or when I did this, it helped me a lot, or it really benefited, you know, me with such and such. Range of motion wise, you know, stuff like that. It was awesome. So it got me, you know, one of those. My biggest thing was I told my physical therapist that, you know, my pet peeve when I'm in the athletic training room is to have my athletes sweating by the end of the rehab session. And they took that to heart, and they made sure I was sweating every time. And if I wasn't very much, I kind of gave them crap for it. I was like, I wanted to prove to them who's better, athletic trainers or physical therapists. And, you know, there's always that stigma, and we always butt heads, physical therapists and ATs. And it's one of those things that, yes, we're a very similar profession on both sides. We just have different views on different issues or different things. So I liked it. You know, I wanted to be challenged. I'm one of those too that if I fail at something, that one of the tasks that they gave me, the next time I came in, I was definitely gonna have it down. So, and I made sure of that. And so when I do my athletes, it's the same way. I was like, dude, no, right now, okay, you know how to do this now. Now that's your homework, is let's work on that. It was a good experience.
Cool. And Bubba.
First off, I'm envious of all you guys for having lower extremity injuries, and I say that because after my surgeries, plural, I was stuck in an abduction pillow in neutral out here like this. And you can't sit in any chair with arms and get comfortable. You can't sleep. I slept in a recliner for months. And when I could finally lay down, I had to sleep on the couch because I could only sleep on my right side and lean against the back of the couch. And it was probably 3 or 4 months before I could sleep in a bed. The other thing, I think the biggest takeaway for me from surgery is all the kids I talk to going into surgery, I tell them, enjoy the ride of waking up. Don't fight it. Just lay there. I think I even told you this. Mm-hmm. Just lay there. Accept the fact that you lived through it, because everybody's scared about that, or most everybody's scared about that. I wasn't. My wife was a basket case. But enjoy the ride. You woke up. You're fine. Go back to sleep. Don't fight trying to figure out what's going on, because you're just going to get sick and throw up, and you're going to feel worse. And then the other thing that's easy now for me is I could tell them, look, you better get some for upper extremity injuries. You're going to be in a sling, so get some shorts with an elastic waistband. As soon as you think you need to go to the bathroom, go ahead and go, because by the time you can get undressed, you really need to go. Okay? And then button-down shirts were easier to get on and off, because I didn't have to move my arm as much, and a pair of shoes that you didn't have to lace. And so, you know, those are things. And then the other thing you tell them is like, look, the second or third day after surgery is the worst from a pain anesthesia standpoint. Get up and get moving. I couldn't work for a week. And luckily I was at home and my neighbors knew me, or they'd have called the cops, because I was walking up and down my street because I had cabin fever and I just needed to move and do something. You know, when you can't do something, what do you want to do? You want to go do it. Couldn't work, wanted to go to work. You know, when you can work, you're like, God, I'd really love to stay home today. So I did a lot of walking, just walking around, because I was bored and I needed something to do, because I wasn't cleared, you know, to go back to work. And then you're worthless at work because you can't lift anything. You can't evaluate anybody, you know. So you get pretty creative with one hand on how to do certain injury evaluations. But again, those, you know, those were the big things. And I'm not sympathetic that you had surgery. I've had four, you know, so I don't care. I've lived through them all and I can function. So let's go.
Yeah, definitely the stir crazy or the cabin fever, like you said, that I was stuck. They didn't clear me to go anywhere for 2 months. So that definitely,
wow,
that was probably the worst part, was trying to figure out. And that's why I think my rehab went so well, was because the free time I had at home, I was rehabbing.
Right.
Because that was the only option, really.
Yeah.
All right, so obviously, Mike, yours was a medical emergency, calling 911. Did anything change in your emergency action plan, the way that you teach your kids, things that you prepare them for?
You know, I don't think so. First of all, it was a separate venue. It was at, I guess, a county park. So really didn't have an official emergency action plan there for that place. But I think it all went like our emergency action plan is set up to go to work. You know, they made the call for 911. They stopped the races, held everybody back for, I think it was a total of 45 minutes. Got the ambulance there, get me loaded up. And it just so happens we actually called the ambulance twice, because when they loaded me up is when they made the determination that my girl had to go by ambulance also. So as I'm getting in the back of the ambulance, we do the whole emergency action plan all over again to get her to the hospital. I think from my perspective, of course, I didn't get to watch everything and what happened as wheels rolled, I guess. But I think it went as smooth as it could for a venue that nobody really works at on a daily basis.
Okay, so I don't know how much – have you ever listened to any of these podcasts that Jeremy does, Mike?
A couple of them.
Okay. Well, the emergency action plan thing is for obvious reasons, for the two of these guys in this room, we've talked a lot about, and I gave a talk a couple weeks ago, and I'm going to give it a couple more times this summer about the emergency action plan. But one of the things that was just brought up that I'm going to ask you about, since you said it was a county park, there was no problem with the EMS knowing where that park was then, because it's a county park. Did they know where to go?
I think they did. We did. We did have security there. We had some sheriff's officers.
Okay.
That were working the gate, because part of the cross country course went right across the entrance to the park. So we did have cops there working the gate. It didn't seem like the ambulance had any issues getting there. You know, you heard it coming. People were lined up to direct them right to me. So I don't think there was any issues with that at all.
Nobody ever said they went in the wrong entrance or anything like that you're aware of at that point?
No. I mean, there's two basic entrances, and I'm pretty familiar with this park. Everybody knows which one's the main entrance and kind of like the back entrance, to say.
Right.
Either way, either entrance would have taken – the road would have taken them straight to me where I was, you know?
Well, and the reason I ask this is because as I was – prepping this talk, this came to me, and you just mentioned it here. You don't have an emergency action plan per se for a county park, and that's fine. The emergency action plan can be fairly generic, but I think one of the big things that I took away from this is, how many times do we go to a playoff venue outside of football where there's an ambulance? That we go to a playoff venue, I don't recall ever asking what the address is.
No.
So now you get there, who's calling 911 now? Is it going to be the clock keeper who maybe is in the middle of the game because you've taken this kid somewhere else? I don't know. Do we know what the address of this school is and what the cross streets are? So that's kind of my new thing now, is to say, okay, I'm going to such and such. What's the address? We can look it up before we get there. You know, and I think the other thing I took home is we have to post our emergency action plan, which, you know, is fairly generic on who's doing what, but let's post it with the address on there. So that, you know, so now I'm looking at going, if I'm at a school, that visitor can look at that posted emergency action plan and say, oh, our address is this, our cross street's this, and our gate is this. So somebody can say, read that right there to 911.
Yeah. I would think one thing at different venues is you always got an administrator there, or you should.
In theory, yes.
In theory, and you should always have security provided from them,
right?
As far as playoff games and whatnot. I think this is very unique. How many times do you go to a county park, you know, for a high school event?
Right, you don't, and you don't typically hire EMS to sit there for those 3 or 4 hours either that are going to be there. So, again, it's just kind of one of those, you don't think about it until after the fact, you know, to go, oops. You know, because honestly, I'll say I never really worried about it, because a lot of the places we go around here, we know somebody.
Yeah.
But we go somewhere we're not familiar with. You know, we're going neutral site an hour and a half away. Depending on what direction an hour and a half I'm going, I may not know anybody.
Yeah.
And depending on what sports you're playing, do we need to go to a bigger baseball facility to host this? Who's that administrator now? You know, there's no telling. So that's, you know, that's in my mind now. Go, okay, we're going to go, and I'm just going to throw out a venue to for the sake of, we're going to go play at Baseball USA. I'm now going to figure out the address to Baseball USA and what field we're playing on, you know. And I can yell at enough people to go stand out in a big human chain to direct the ambulance in from there. But hopefully they know where you can at least tell them where to go.
Yeah, no doubt. That's a good point.
Did it seem like the ambulance got there fairly quickly for you? I mean, it all slows down and it felt like an hour, but in reality it was 10 minutes or whatever. But how long do you think it took the ambulance to get there for you?
Yeah, you know, for me mentally, it was, where is this ambulance? Because the pain was pretty
creeping up.
Hurry up and get here and give me drugs ASAP. But I think it got there pretty fast. I don't know, maybe 5-10 minutes. Timeline doesn't really work for me in this situation, but mentally it took forever.
Right.
But me being a professional, I think it got there pretty fast, especially where I work. I work in Magnolia. I mean, there's been times that we've waited 30 minutes for an ambulance.
Right.
So, I mean, we got maybe 2 ambulances in the area. And if they get out on calls, we got an ambulance coming in from the Woodlands. And, you know, I've had times where the fire departments got here to our school. We spine boarded a kid and we waited another 15 minutes before the ambulance actually got here.
Right.
So, you know, I think they were pretty fast and whatnot. Just, I don't think they gave me the drugs fast enough for whatever reason.
Gee, I wonder why. Okay, so, I mean, obviously this, we're kind of taking a different fork in the road, but still on the same topic. What was the mindset or the reasoning behind not splinting you on site with equipment already there?
As far as the athletic trainers?
Yes.
You know, I think just how deformed the leg was, it was, the bone was definitely pushing on the skin, and the risk of it becoming compound at that point looked,
you're having surgery anyway, who cares?
I mean, it was pushing pretty well on the skin, and with the aid of the EMS and giving me pain meds, they splinted me as soon as they got there, and then I got on the gurney and moved on.
Who rode with you to the hospital?
Nobody.
Really?
The paramedics and the EMT. Our head football coach was there also. He and I rode together in his truck. He followed the ambulance.
Okay. All right. All right.
Didn't actually ride, but he did follow the ambulance, and I don't know. He was at the hospital for a good while with me.
Okay. All right. So somebody did go. That's all right. Because that's one of my questions in my talk is who's either riding with or following to go someone. Because in my opinion, that should be part of your emergency action plan is who's going with if the parents aren't there.
No doubt. And, you know, it's unique because I'm a staff member, but in our emergency plan, if the parents aren't there, a coach is either riding with or in their car following, most definitely.
I would say if it's a student, they ought to ride with, but and then somebody else can, an administrator later could come, but that's a whole other topic for another time. But, yeah, okay.
All right, Jesse, again, you didn't have to call. It wasn't an emergency action plan, but have you made any changes to your policies, procedures? I know you said you had Ruth kind of feel, and, you know, like you said, it was even the next day before you really decided something was wrong. Mm-hmm. Have you made any changes due to your injury?
As far as my emergency action plan?
Yeah, like just how you treat things or, you know, like things you're teaching your students because you're like, okay, well, I need to have a plan for if I get injured, if I fall off a golf cart.
No, but now that we're discussing it, it actually does. It does sound like something that I definitely want to start doing. If not, you know, start putting it in place. You know, if one of us, you know, me or Ruth were to go down, you know, who would do what? You know, hopefully it'll be at a time where both of us are still on campus. Because something like now at this time of the year, it's kind of, you know, if it's just practices going on, it's a slower season, I guess you can say, where there's multiple things going on. One of us will usually head out early, and one will stay on campus. So that's definitely something to consider.
I think I'm torn. I don't know that you write it down per se. My argument being, we can't say it'll never happen to us because we're sitting here talking about it happening to us.
Right.
But isn't that what coaches get CPR, AED trained for?
Yeah.
At some point, they got to step up too, not just with their own athletes, but another staff member, a community member, it doesn't matter. They should be able to function in that brief period of time and do what needs to be done.
Right.
And so, you know, and as I always argued with them when the law first came out that they had to get trained, is I don't ride on your bus back home from your road game or from any of your games, really, for that matter. So you can't say you depend on me. You're coming back from Beaumont at 10 o'clock at night. I'm still on campus or I'm at home. So, no. So I think they can function in that regard. And again, that I think that's the beauty of having an emergency action plan that gets drilled, and those coaches have an idea of what needs to be done. They're not going to get it perfect. It's like CPR. You're not going to do it 30-2 and everything's right. But if you can get the ambulance to the right gate and make sure that gate's opened or in the right entrance and do the other things, then I think it served its purpose.
But see, too, you just kind of sparked something with me, too, though, is I feel the coaches rely on the student trainers a lot, too. At least at my school, that's how it is. That if something was to happen to a kid, let's say, on the bus ride home, and it's just my student trainers that are traveling with them, the coaches are hands-free, and they'd probably end up wanting my student trainers to assess stuff versus them. Unfortunately, the likelihood of that happening is probably going to be greater.
Well, and I don't think you're the exception to the rule either.
Right. Oh, you know. Not. So, and that's the thing, too, though, is that, like, in all honesty, and I've done this, I think, years past, and I'm probably going to start doing it again, you know, here soon, but kind of reiterating, because we always do CPR training with our students at the beginning of the school year, you know, kind of getting a refresher kind of mid-school year, kind of now in the spring session, just to kind of, you know, drive it home that, hey, this is serious, you never know when this can happen, and we're, you know, just dust off some cobwebs as far as that CPR chain of command, everything that, you know,
right,
emergency action plans that we can still put in place, even though we're not there physically ourselves.
All right, Mike, chime in.
You know, one thing that's changed for us is, you know, right away I made a phone call to Danielle Keys. She's my assistant out here, and made sure she knew what was going on. That night we had home volleyball match and junior high game that I was supposed to be at to cover. You know, that begs the question, what if an athletic trainer gets hurt? How do you provide adequate coverage, medical coverage, for all the sports, all the events that are going on? You know, that night I was making phone calls to, or later that afternoon, I was making phone calls to make sure we had people to cover some of the stuff that we needed extra help for. And we were able to get a little contract together with one of our local hospitals. And they had an athletic trainer on staff that they were able to send to help out and cover junior high and volleyball and help out with football and whatnot. But, you know, what does happen when an athletic trainer gets hurt and you don't have enough personnel to provide coverage?
It goes back to like it was when most of us started, you're by yourself.
Yeah.
The problem is, because I'm with you 100%. The problem is coaches and administrators think that we're like retired teachers and nurses, that there's just a million of us sitting around with nothing to do, that they can just snap their fingers and somebody's going to be there to cover. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, in this area right here, there's two that are retired athletic trainers. That's it.
That's the hard thing. PRN services are not readily available. They're
non-existent.
It takes a while to find somebody, and hopefully they can adjust their schedule to help you out.
Right. And just because they can help you today doesn't mean they're available next week or the week after, or, you know, for 2 months later.
No doubt. It's definitely opened up an eye in our school district, and we're definitely exploring possibilities of what we could do to get, you know, maybe an additional athletic trainer here or there to help out some and you know, try to improve our overall athletic program and prepare for the what if situation.
Because you can't hire a long-term sub.
No doubt.
Yeah. So I'm saying you can get somebody to step in and coach. You can get a volunteer coach, but you can't get somebody to volunteer athletic trainer. It's illegal.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yep. So those are the things I'm kind of curious about. How did you, so, you know, Jesse, you were out. You guys didn't have spring football.
Luckily, we didn't have spring football. So Ruth lucked out, and I was very worried because, I was thinking, you know, luckily, too, I was able, if I would have had surgery or if it would have gotten improved a lot sooner, I would have had surgery probably in end of February, which still would have put everything still going on at that time.
That would be the worst.
So, yeah, and so luckily I was still fully functional. So that's why, I mean, you know, I hate that it happened, of course, like, unfortunate, but it still lucked out that I was still fully functional. I was still able to do everything duty-wise, athletic training-wise, until my surgery actually occurred, and I chose to go ahead and get it done right after soccer season was done. So really it was just baseball, softball season, which was midway through, and Ruth luckily was able to handle, you know, the workload at that time of covering both of those sports at the same time, to where it didn't, you know, I guess, you know, hinder her doing. And so I, you know, I took it then, and it it worked out, luckily. But yeah, it would have been a scary situation if I would have been non-functional and end of February, mid-February, where everything is full swing, there would have been no way. I mean, it would have been, again, luckily we have enough trainers in our district, but that would have still put a strain on several of y'all within our district.
I can't walk over there, drag them over here and I'll look at them. I mean, that, yeah. You know, so.
Yeah, for me, I sat in the end zone watching a football game for 3 weeks. I mean, I was non-functional, non-weight-bearing. There was nothing I could have done really to help out. So it was a different view for me. The first time I was actually able to work, it was week one of the football playoffs. Our volleyball was in the regional tournament. So, you know, what do? You got two athletic trainers at a high school. One could actually work a football game. You got a contract guy that's helping you out. And it was right when I was partial weight bearing, just beginning partial weight bearing, I went and worked the regional volleyball tournament, you know, on crutches, partial weight bearing. That was kind of different, you know.
Sounds scary.
And then the next week was the actual round two of playoffs, was the first football game that I worked. I'm on the sidelines just trucking along with crutches, you know, doing what I could, trying to stay out of the way so I didn't, you know, get trucked over, you know, make sure you're far enough away from the play.
On the track, of course, right?
No, I was – yeah, we had one of the other opposing players go down right next to our sideline. And, you know, it just so happens I was the closest athletic trainer, so – I was first one out to them, and you know what you normally do for opposing athletic trainers, figure out what's going on, or opposing athletes on football field, figure out what's going on. And by the time their athletic trainers get there, you know, let them know where they're hurt and what's going on and whatnot and get out of the way. But the whole time I'm sitting there thinking, golly, I'm on crutches myself.
Right.
All right. So, Mike, talk just a little bit more about the process of getting a contract. Was that through the athletic director? Was that through the principal? Because I'm just curious. I know we've had people, two people this year pregnant, and they were out for several months. And as far as I know, our district didn't have any substitutes. We just kind of absorbed that extra workload when those people were gone. So how did that work, or what's some ideas or tips for people that are going to be in that situation? Obviously, nobody plans to break their tip fib, but it happens. So.
Absolutely. Well, you know, our school district's fortunate enough to have an official healthcare provider agreement with one of our local hospitals. So as soon as this happened, Richard Davis, who's at Magnolia West, you know, my colleague over there and our athletic director got together. They got in touch with the administration over at the hospital and said, hey, here's our situation. Do y'all have an athletic trainer that we could work out a deal with and get them over here? And they identified one of their guys that primary role was a strength coach at the Sports Medicine Center, but he was also a LAT. And, you know, legal departments of a hospital got to get involved and stuff like that. It took a week to get the lawyers to figure out, you know, terms of the contract, send it over to our people. Our people look over it, make sure there's mutual immunities involved in the situation, and get the contract executed. And, you know, you got to figure out how much we're going to pay, who we're going to pay, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, I think it took a week or so to get that developed in the process. We already had another guy that we were using kind of PRN to help out with our junior high when needed. Fortunate for us, he was able to keep on coming out here and helped out some other local athletic trainers that maybe had a Thursday night game or a Saturday night game, came out and helped us out until we had that established. You know, thank God for colleagues, because, you know, it would have made life pretty miserable over here. Especially, you know, Tuesday night volleyball here at home, and we have responsibilities to cover football at our junior high, which is, you know, 20, 25 minutes away. So, you know, luckily we got colleagues in the area that were free and able and willing to help out and provide that coverage for our kids.
And your situation is a little different. Like here, they had two basically on maternity leave at the same time. And I'm willing to help, but human cloning's not legal, you know. And again, it's me, and you've got two retired people in the general area, one of them close, the other not so much. But, you know, you're up in your area, there's more than there are down here and in other areas. It's the luck of the draw, in essence. You know, you kind of had a perfect storm of enough people there that you were going to have gaps, but your gaps were fewer and further between.
Yeah, you're fortunate. We got one of the U of H Masters of Athletic Trainer students that was already LAT that he was able to figure out his class schedule and whatnot and come out here all the way to Magnolia. Golly, that's an hour drive just to get out here and help us out. And but still, like you said, there's some athletic trainers that are retired and out here and still have their license. But I mean, there's so many junior highs that want coverage at their football games that all those guys are taking.
Right.
You know, that we have somebody driving from University of Houston out to Magnolia just to help us out with coverage.
And I can tell you this, when I retire, I'm done. You know, you're not going to see me covering other stuff when I'm retired. Good luck finding me, you know.
No doubt.
So, Bubba, speak to the same issue from the hospital standpoint. What are some things that can be done to help take care of, I don't know, like what would you do in Mike's situation from the hospital side?
Well, as I've done, if I'm available, I'm willing to help out. You know, it gets a little difficult to say, okay, how much of my job that I was hired to do I give up to go cover, in essence, semi-full-time at school X? We looked at, in that regard, some people that we knew that were out of athletic training per se, but were teaching at schools. A couple of them were pregnant, you know, and had some other things going on. So again, when it was coming up in this district, it was almost non-existent for people that were available. And then we got a little lucky here in that when the births happened, it wasn't crazy nuts yet with all this. The sports weren't ramping up where everything was getting going in season yet. So it was a little more manageable, so to speak, for that one individual at that school. Because what, they both came back right around McDonald's tournament time. Mm-hmm. You know, because if it had been McDonald's tournament time, I'd already been working on a plan to try to put people at those schools, you know, and I had that figured out. But, you know, for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, what if they go in? And I've had the situation too. My coworker was put on bed rest in the summer with twins, and I was lucky enough to find somebody to hire for a semester. Because if not, I'd have been by myself, you know.
That's terrible.
So it is what it is. And so I think there's a silver lining in all this in two parts. With one, Mike saying that more middle schools are wanting coverage, more athletic directors are looking for that coverage. And then somebody getting hurt, what are you going to do now? I think the administrative side can see maybe they don't have enough athletic trainers in their district to be able to take care of everything that needs to be taken care of. And what do you do if your head football coach is out? Your coordinators take over. What do you do if your principal's out? Your assistant principals take over. Your associate superintendents take over. But if we're out, we're out, you know, because we're always the forgotten profession in all of this.
It shines the light. They definitely they see the importance of us once we're not available anymore.
Right. Definitely. You hope they do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully they're not excited when you're gone.
Right.
So
we got fortunate that neither one of us teach any classes over here. So, you know, that during the school day portion of it, not a big deal. It was the event coverage for us that was the issue.
Right. But if you were out a month ago with this same injury, I'd have cut my wrist if I worked with you. You know, I mean, because we all know you can't function this time of year with two people.
Yeah.
You know, for years when I was doing this, I was by myself, you know.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I did that for 2 years by myself.
That's why I don't have any hair.
Is that why you talk so much? Is because you're so used to talking to yourself?
Yeah, I know. And I answer back too.
All right. So there was a couple of other stories that, you know, as I got all these people, again, Doc Hale, Mitchell, Rob DeJohn, Israel, Carlos, Catherine, Callie, Jason, Ruth, John, Joanna. Everyone, I'm sure, has got a story of being injured. John saying he dislocated a rib and had to put it back in himself. Israel dislocated his ankle by getting run over by a golf cart. Ruth got run over by football players on the sideline, which Robbie was telling me Chrissy Cope did too. And then I think he said right after that, there was a stray punt where he was checking a kid for a concussion, and he got hit in the head with a football with that stray punt and got a concussion, ended up with a concussion. So
evaluating the concussed.
Exactly. Ruth is taping in. Now she got to stand up for herself. But I think she's going to say she got run over more than once. So we'll see what she says. But all in all, getting injured, in my opinion, helps me relate to what the athletes are going through. Again, I hyperextended my knee playing tag with kids, but it was still something that required more attention than I was able to at that time give myself. So not that I'm going to ask anybody to volunteer to get injured or to hurt themselves so they can understand this, but Jesse, your overall, I guess, the 30,000-foot view of your injury and it relating to your profession, what do you think that is?
as far as hold on,
how does an injury help you relate to your profession overall? Sum it up.
Well, it's similar to, you know, you kind of just sparked the something in me, just the fact that, you know, your coaches, most of your coaches have played their sport before. So, and from what it seems, that most of the athletic trainers that I've come in contact with, most of them have gone through their experience as well, whether it be childhood or recent themselves. There's something that, you know, makes you, that drives you, that kind of that sparked the whole interest in athletic training or whatever profession it is that you do. The big thing is it made me have an appreciation for the injury itself again. ACLs to me at the time before I did mine was kind of just becoming stagnant. It was kind of just, you know, okay, well, you're going to do your quad sets. We're going to get range of motion. We're going to do just the yada, yada, yada that goes along with ACLs. Well, now that I've experienced it, you know, I added a couple things to it. I had, you know, the definition stuff to it. A lot of like your tissue therapy is what I actually definitely took from it, because that was something I wasn't doing beforehand, that I really had, you know, I knew of it, but I wasn't knowing of it from a post-surgery standpoint. So that definitely helped to throw in my back pocket. So it was just, you know, overall just luckily a good experience. Luckily I'm fully functional once again. I'm back to doing pretty much all activities that I was doing beforehand. So I mean, it's, you know, and now I have both perspectives of being injured and being an athletic trainer again, you know, kind of refueled to some extent.
Injured twice, upper and lower body.
Yeah.
All right, Bubba, same deal, kind of an overview. How did it change?
I think that besides being able to show the scar and say, shut up, I've been there, is the fact that you can walk them through the steps. I think they've got to go through their five stages of grief, so to speak, and do all that. But you can tell them there's life after this. You can get through it. If I can get through it, anybody can. But to be able to prep them again to say, hey, make sure you're prepared to do this. Go practice getting undressed one-handed, you know. Hello, where are you going to sleep? Mom, they're going to be in a sling, or, you know, or they're going to be in this brace they can't take off. You know, the other thing is I think we can all appreciate, I woke my wife up many nights when I'd get up out of the recliner and go plug my cryocuff in for the ice, because what did we all learn? Ice feels really, really good, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's not cold. It feels great. But, you know, we can say, hey, understand, you appreciate now the pain relief ice gives you, and, you know, enjoy the ride coming out of, you know, anesthesia and all those things. It is what it is. And you cannot just say, well, this is what I think. This is what I know. I've lived it. You know, so it gives you a little more credibility, even though they don't believe you on anything you say anyway.
Well, two, you get to motivate your athletes since you experienced it. You know, hey, I did it. I did this. Come on. I 2 weeks I was here.
At, right.
Come on. Hey, you're slacking.
That bubble still hurts. So.
Let's get it going.
Yeah, I am still hurt. I'm trying to get an injury settlement, but it isn't in the NFL. So, you know, it's not going to happen.
All right, Mike. So looking back, how has this changed you, or how does this affect your practice?
He wants to break the other leg now.
No. God, no. I'll tell you, the biggest thing it's done is it's given me an appreciation for the little things in life. When I was sitting there at the house doing nothing for a week and a half, you know, just waking up and going in to get something to drink in the morning, or making breakfast and making lunch and be able to carry that plate to the dinner table, yep. You know, on crutches and living by yourself. Boy, that's pretty hard. But then it's helped me become a better athletic trainer. 24 sessions in rehab. There's one thing to sit there and go to a physical therapy clinic and observe for a day and sit there and try to learn new techniques. A day is really not enough. I've had 24 opportunities, sometimes 2 hours at a time, to sit there and watch numerous physical therapists, you know, do rehab on various age patients. And, you know, just you like Jesse said, you get content with what you're doing for an ACL rehab. Well, you know, it broadens my view on, hey, you know, let's change this up. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let's bring in these resources. You know, it helps you become a better athletic trainer because you get to focus on rehab a little bit more. There's so many aspects of an athletic trainer's job. It's not just the rehab. It's not just being there for the first responder, you know, to be able to sit there and watch physical therapists do their job 24 times for hours upon end and just learn the little things that they do to help our athletes get better improves me. It's going to make me better at my job, in turn help our kids get back on the field or court faster. And that's what I appreciate the most out of it.
Hey, Mike, I meant to ask you this earlier. Did you break your right or left leg?
Right.
So then you couldn't drive for how long?
Oh, yeah, it was difficult. Yeah, it was a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing like going back to work as a grown man. I was working half days and mom having to pick me up. And
he posted pictures of them going to physical therapy. Yeah, I remember.
I saw that. Did she make you a lunch every day too?
Yeah. And just to add to that, mom had back surgery 2 months before. And so she was already at physical therapy. And you know, I got her set up with our orthopedics. So it was fortunate that we were able to go together.
Who drove y'all to therapy, or was she driving for that?
Mom was driving. Yeah. Mom, it was 2 months out, so she was driving at that point. But yeah, we would literally go to rehab together. Mom on one table, I'm on the next one.
Family affair.
Yeah, just to add to the story a little bit better. And I was working half days at first, so whenever I'd go to leave, it was the beginning of athletic period. And there's mom and dad picking me up. Of course, they're both retired. So. Wow. Oh, yeah. Awesome.
Thanks. Mike, your mom's here to get you.
Mom's here.
Yeah. The only thing that would have made that better is if they'd have called you out over the school PA.
Oh, no doubt. No. They drove right up to the field house and he'd pick me up. We'd go to rehab and knock it out for a couple hours. So it was pretty cool, you know, to see what was going on with mom as well, you know, to see how they were rehabbing her back. So it was neat.
Very cool. Very cool. I definitely understand everything you're saying. It renews your appreciation for the injury and re-energizes you for rehabbing and helps you walk through and say, you know, I've also been through this. So again, nobody wants to volunteer, but you know, making lemonade out of lemons, is that right? Yeah, lemonade out of lemons. So, and then definitely there's things to think of as we were talking about with Bubba with the emergency action plan coming up. Bubba, when's the next time you're going to be talking about that?
In June at our sports medicine update.
All right. So then I'll have an opportunity to record it then and. Cool. All right. So then you'll be able to hear Bubba's full talk about the emergency action plan and on all the hypotheticals, things you need to think through beforehand. So definitely a great conversation. I want to be sure and thank all the people that were joined in live or commented in the chat room talking about your injuries. And maybe we'll just have a part two to this episode when athletic trainers get injured. But episode number 200 is coming up. That's where we're going to have a 4-hour blab. So it's going to be similar format here if you're logged in, but the blab, it makes it easier for people to jump in and out of the conversation. I can have people from wherever. We're going to have 8 different guests. I'm going to have a co-host, so it'll be me, a co-host, and a guest, and then there'll be one more spot open for somebody to jump in or for questions, and people can be in the chat room. So that'll be March 2nd. We're kicking off National Athletic Training Month, March 2nd. Our first guest will be NATA President Scott Saylor, and then we have quite a few other guests there. So again, March 2nd, join us for episode number 200. I'll have links to that stuff, especially coming out in the email list. So that's on the website there at sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Check out sportsmedicinebroadcast.com for the list of the schedule, and I'll have a separate page for March because we're also doing an episode every day that we're in school and not doing standardized testing. So it's either 12 or 15 episodes during the month of March. Very busy, a lot of work, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Sportshealth.com/SMB. School Health is partnered with the Sports Medicine Broadcast to give you a gift card each month if you're the winner. So Cap Mar won the one that I just sent out. So the password for February is SPATS. The password for March is the name of my friend, Bubba. Bubba, did you know that you were the password?
I do now.
You do now. So in March, you can use Bubba's name for the password at sportshealth.com.
People think I'm worth nothing.
So. There you go. You're worth something. And then, like I said, this summer, well, I'll be broadcasting live at the South Padre Athletic Trainers Seminar. Thanks to people like Israel Montano, logged in live, hooking me up with some key people. So I think me and Bubba will both be there.
Yes.
Check us out. Jesse normally goes, right? There have been quite a few times.
I usually do, yes.
So just real quick, what do you think about SPATS?
SPATS is awesome. It's one of those things that you definitely can get some good information. You learn in a well atmosphere, and then you still have a place to go. You know, who doesn't enjoy the beach when all the seminars and conferences are done? So I mean, you have easy access to the beach while learning a few things here and there being down there.
My first time to go this year.
Mine too. Very cool. So just you'll have to show us around if you go, but that's a different story. So again, we'll be talking to people from SPATS in the middle of March again when we're doing all of our injuries, all of our podcasts. This episode, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/ATinjuries. So when you go to look later at show notes or for links or just to see pictures or whatever it is, so sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/ATinjuries. Almost every single Wednesday we're live. We're skipping next week. Then we'll have Dr. Summer Hot talking about concussions, subsymptomatic post-concussion exercise plans, and then we start off with March, and it's just going to be crazy. So I'm on Twitter at PHS Sports Med. This is Jeremy Jackson, Sports Medicine Broadcast. Mike, say goodbye.
See ya.
Oh, I've had it on you the whole time there. Bubba, you can say goodbye.
Goodbye.
And Jesse.
Hey, take it easy.
And that is a wrap.